with the one-year anniversary of the Gulf oil disaster and Friday's annual Earth Day celebrations occurring in the space of 1 week, the environment is inevitably going to be on people's minds right now. But how we think about our environment is another matter. One of the major issues in this realm, climate change, is still divided very much along ideological lines. People accept or dismiss the scientific data through the lens of their own leanings, it seems. So is climate change as much a social issue as a scientific one? And is it in danger, as some have suggested, of becoming the equivalent of a new abortion debate, especially in the United States? Andrew Hoffman is a professor of sustainable enterprise at the University of Michigan. He's been studying the social and political underpinnings of the backlash against climate change science and has recently written about it in a journal called Strategic Organization. And Andrew Hoffman joins me today from our studio in Boston. Hello, sir.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you on the program. As a social scientist, what got you looking at the public's belief or its skepticism in climate change?
Well, I just became fascinated by the form of the social debate, the prominence of climate skeptics or climate deniers in the United States, and was curious to understand what was going on. Why was it happening the way it was happening?
And give us the lay of the land. Tell us how climate change belief breaks down between political groups in the U.S., say Democrats versus Republicans.
Well, I mean, the data show, the public opinion data show that about 3/4 of Democrats and only 1/3 of Republicans believe that climate change is real. That speaks to an ideological filter that people are using to analyze the very same data.
So if you're liberal in the United States, you're more likely to believe that climate change, believe the science on it. And if you're not, you're likely to believe, to be skeptical.
Yes, it's falling along those lines. Interestingly, more so in the United States than other places in Europe, there are climate skeptics and climate deniers, but they don't follow along political ideological lines like they do in the United States.
How did this happen in North America? How did this happen in the States? Has the issue always fallen along ideological lines here?
No, it hasn't. If you go back to the early 90s, it wasn't split this way. The split started to happen in the late 1990s around the signing of the Kyoto Treaty. With that, it started to take on real importance for the economy, the market, society, and lines started to get drawn of people, you know, powerful economic interests, political interests, choosing sides on whether to take this issue seriously because now it had real consequences.
You know, this may sound obvious, but on the physical science side, is there not pretty much universal agreement in the scientific community that climate change is occurring?
Yes, this is a very strong consensus. It's important to point out, though, that this isn't a single binary yes-no question, is climate change happening? If you look in the sciences, it's a series of questions with probabilities associated with them. Is CO2 going up? Are we causing it? What are the consequences? Those have different answers and different probabilities. So is CO2 going up? Yes, very high probability. Are we causing it? Yes, pretty high probability. What are the outcomes? You can draw a distribution curve, and on one tail, low impacts. On the other tail, very high impacts, and then variance in between. And there isn't, you know, there isn't a clear answer. This is what's going to happen. There's a variance of responses of what can happen. But there is consensus that that human beings are affecting greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere.
One of the reasons I ask about this, I mean, is whenever we've discussed climate change on this show, there was one episode we had David Suzuki and Al Gore both in the studio. People write in to debate the scientific evidence that's quoted by our guests. And it's true that not many of us have the scientific knowledge to interpret papers directly from scientists, and there's been a scandal around some falsified data at some point. But why are some people unwilling to accept scientific findings around climate change?
Well, if you think about what are the implications of accepting that climate change is real, more government bureaucracy, national government, international government, controls on the market, restraints on carbon-based fuels, increased energy prices, concern that this is driven by an ideological movement that is anti-development, distrust in the scientific process itself, concern that this will ruin the economy. I can go down the list, but the scientific debate and the scientific consensus is in many ways It informs the social debate, but it doesn't dominate. Scientists don't have the definitive final word on whether the average American, and politician for that matter, accepts climate change as an issue that needs to be addressed.
So on this note, your work looks at the social and cultural basis of the backlash against climate change science. How did you go about conducting your research?
One of my doctoral students went to the number one climate skeptics conference in the country. It took place in Chicago 2 years ago, and interviewed people, took field notes. We analyzed them, and then we looked at op-eds over a two-year period in all media outlets in the United States. There was about 800 op-eds that mentioned global warming or climate change, and we put down a pretty rigorous coding scheme to look at which ones are skeptical, which ones are convinced, and then what are the frames used in it within each to see, are they talking about the same issue or are they talking about different issues, and what are the ideological frames that are most at play?
Many environmentalists argue that we're already dangerously behind on addressing climate change. For those who do believe in climate change, why is it important to take the time to understand the cultural side, the other side of this debate?
Well, you know, I teach organizational behavior in a business school. This is the analogy I like to use. And it's not a very popular course among MBAs, and it's the most sought after among executives. MBAs come in and think, I just have to come up with the right idea and I'm done. Executives realize I have to convince people it's the right idea, and then I have to get them to do it. So you can stand firm behind the science and say climate change is real, but that's not enough. You have to convince people that it's real, and then you have to convince people to do something about it. It's not simply enough to have what you think to be the right idea.
Even if so, I mean, it's a strange one, right? If scientists are telling us that this is what's happening, we're not to just take that at face value. We're to try and.
I'm not saying that, but in a representative democracy, you have to get consensus around an issue. Think about the issue of cigarette smoking. For decades, scientists said that cigarettes cause cancer, and a skeptical public did not accept it. A social process begins. You have competing social movements, competing interests, and eventually a social consensus exists today where people pretty much accept the idea that cigarettes are bad for you, that they cause cancer. But you can go back to the 50s. I remember seeing an ad saying 9 out of 10 doctors recommend cool cigarettes. So we're in a similar debate now, and it's going to take some time to get social consensus. But just pounding people who are not inclined to believe the data, just pounding them with more data, very often can backfire and cause people to dig their heels in even
more.
Give
me a bit more of a sense of the underpinnings of this debate. How do political and cultural values come into play on the question of, say, mistrust of elitist, quote-unquote, scientists?
Yeah. This was written about in 1964. There's a book, Anti-Intellectualism in American Life. Hofstadter wrote it. Won the 1964 Pulitzer Prize. It's not a new strand in American society of people being skeptical of these distant academics sitting in an ivory tower, analyzing issues that are above their access, the conclusions of which have great importance for the way they live. That makes people uncomfortable. It seems reasonable that it would. The recent scandals that you alluded to, Climategate, concern over misreported loss of glaciers in the Himalayas, these kinds of issues feed that doubt in the general public over the scientific process, such that many who are skeptical of the science feel that the scientific review process has become corrupted, such that you only get papers accepted and you only get funding if you toe the party line. I think that we have to recognize that this entire debate is taking place within an American society that is limited on its scientific literacy. What is science saying? And then how do they reach conclusions? What's the difference between uncertainty, probability, and just not knowing? And I think that a lot of people are analyzing this issue through the lenses that they have available to them, which are generally ideological. And you know, you can also put in there that, you know, people will adopt values of their referent group, who they associate with the most.
Right.
And if you are leaning, you are living in a more conservative community where the dominant conversation is that climate change is a dubious theory, then you will adopt this idea. And it, you know, in the United States, that's been dubbed the culture wars.
Right.
And people's positioning on climate change will fall along the similar lines of issues like abortion, health care, gun control.
And so what follows from that is, and by the way, we're not immune to this in Canada. I mean, we've got our own version of these culture wars as well. So if you make the case that climate change is increasingly becoming or has become part of the American culture wars, yeah, on level with abortion politics, gun control, evolution, the idea is that the two sides become so entrenched and fall along ideological lines that the discussion gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
I don't think we're there yet, but we're getting close. But I think also that there's a current lull in Washington. A climate change bill isn't going to come up in this next 2 years, not likely. And so there's an opportunity for the debate to calm down, although the recent debate over EPA funding to regulate greenhouse gas emissions under the Clean Air Act has kept it on the mm-hmm. front burner. In a present lull, there is an opportunity to take a breath, reevaluate the debate, and put it on a different footing.
But if it doesn't calm down, Andrew, you flagged that this debate may eventually become what you call a logic schism, in which mm-hmm. skeptics and those convinced of climate change talk past each other, taking oppositional sides that no scientific evidence can shake. What's at stake if the public comes to that kind of a stalemate?
Well, then it becomes a power game, and a reasoned and informed debate is over. It becomes entrenched within the political partisanship. The best analogy I can think of is abortion, that it has now become a litmus test in the parties. I don't see it being resolved anytime in the foreseeable future. And sides are drawn, and the debate takes on a form of its own. Whether it's accurate or not is a different question.
So in your opinion, how can those with differing views find productive ways of talking about climate change?
Well, getting down to the real level of the issue, which is at these ideological levels, is the scientific process corrupt? Let's have a question. Let's have a discussion about that, and let's get people to understand how science works. What is the proper role of government? That is a debate that's in play right now, and I think it's a very interesting one, an important one for us to have. How much faith do we place in the market, and can the market solve these problems on their own, or is government regulation necessary? What are the risks associated with this? And importantly, do the risks suggest a prudent response? If you're going to wait for the smoking gun on this one before you do anything, it may be too late. It's akin to the idea of buying I have fire insurance on my home. It's a low probability event, but the consequences are high, and therefore I buy that insurance. Is the probability of something happening here of significant level that we prudence should dictate we should do something? This is the level that we have it at, and it's starting to be engaged. Stephen Chu, Secretary of Energy, talks about the developments in renewable energy in China and refers to it as our Sputnik moment. He's saying this is an issue of economic competitiveness. Tom Friedman's been the same thing. The Pope talks about it as an issue of equity and fairness and in global society. He's putting it in the plane of religious morality. So we can go down the list, but this is the domain in which the debate is really.
What about the politicians? Before I let you go, you know, you may know that Canada is in the midst of a federal election. I know, and your country will be heading into one next year. What role do you think politicians of different stripes should have in bringing people together on divisive environmental issues like climate change?
Well, that speaks to a broader issue of the partisanship that's going on in Washington right now. I think most Americans hope it will end, and that the politicians will get down to the serious business of working on these critical issues that face us as a society. But climate change has fallen into that category of issues that is divided along party lines in the House and the Senate, and it's very frustrating to see. But I think that there is some opportunity or some glimmers of light when I hear people say, you know, we got to be careful on this issue. We're going to be seen as the party that's anti-science. That is bringing it down to the level that I think it's important to bring this issue.
Andrew Hoffman, I thank you for this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Andrew Hoffman is a professor of sustainable enterprise at the University of Michigan. He's studying the social and political underpinnings of the backlash against climate change science. He joined me this morning from Boston.